Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms. I'm a foreign affairs writer based in London, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips in North Carolina. We get together once a week to discuss world affairs. This week we're talking about the royal engagement, Meghan and Harry. We're also talking about the crisis in Moringa, Ivanka in India, and how to make bread from crickets. Hope you enjoy. Thanks very much.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World. This afternoon's program, of course, has been pre-recorded to accommodate the sleeping schedule for our foreign editor, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Looking forward to hearing a variety of observations from him. Everything from, well, all the hoopla about the impending royal wedding to an American, no less. And of course, we have issues happening internationally. And then we're going to find out what's happening in Europe and the United Kingdom. As always, it's a great deal of pleasure to introduce Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And with that, Tom, a good evening to you. It's a little early right now as we broadcast, as we prepare this program, but as it's broadcast, it's nearly, well, 11:10 p.m. your time. Good evening to you, Tom.
Good evening to you, Lockwood. It's certainly evening here. It's dark and cold and dank and dismal outside. It's the onset of a British winter.
And possibly Christmas season. Speaking of which, what is it like there in the United Kingdom with Christmas? Is it as intense as it is here in the States? We were chatting earlier about Thanksgiving, and we're going to get details about the upcoming Arms, that is Tom Arms, annual event there related to Thanksgiving. But let's focus for a moment on Christmas. What's it like there in the United Kingdom?
Well, you know, a lot of the same things. We don't have quite as many Christmas decorations as they do in the States. My brother-in-law came over a few years ago and felt a bit disappointed that everything wasn't lit up on everything, every single street. So there's not quite as many Christmas decorations, but a lot of the same customs. People get a bit more time off. For instance, the day after Christmas here is a public holiday called Boxing Day. Mm-hmm. And generally people take off anywhere between 10 and 2 weeks from work for Christmas. Country more or less shuts down.
This is, it kind of shuts down here. Everybody goes into sort of a zone, but we sort of go through the motions of activity, but it's all focused on shopping. Question for you, Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and Cyber Monday, which we've just concluded here. What's it like there again in the United Kingdom?
It just started here a few years ago. It's one of the imports from America, which a lot of people don't feel very happy with, although the retailers do. They do very well on it. Mm-hmm. And it tends to start about a week before Black Friday, but they call it Black Friday, and it goes on and lasts for about a week after Black Friday.
Yeah, same. That's happening
here.
And
then it picks up again in the New Year sales.
Yeah, it's happening here. Yeah. And then final question for you. We talked decorations. Two questions, actually. The party season, is this considered a major party environment?
Night after night. It's very difficult. I've got two functions on Monday night. I have to dress up as an ogre in a pantomime with my scout group and then quickly rush into a toilet, change into a suit, and rush off to a Christmas dinner party.
It shows it's just how popular you are, particularly as an ogre. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon, actually this evening. And then, Tom, the other quick question, and of course, this has to do with the whole focus on gift giving. Is that a big issue there in the United Kingdom?
Oh, yes. And we spend, as a family, we always spend far too much. We always say we're not going to. And we always do.
Right. I can appreciate that. Everybody has that same plan. All right. Let's move on to items of note here. And I want to go to news items. I want to start with the States, as I tend to do with you, Tom. Of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio with us. the stories breaking early this morning, actually late last night and early this morning, related to yet again another topic of sexual impropriety, in this case involving Matt Lauer. First question, has that broken as a news item there in the United Kingdom and Europe?
Yes. In fact, I think we get more items about sexual harassment in America than we do over here. Although we have our own TV celebrity who is fighting his corner, a chap called John Leslie, who presented a children's news program called Blue Peter for BBC. And he's under investigation now as well. He was about to appear on a program called Celebrity Big Brother, and they were going to pay him £500,000, which is about $650,000, to appear on this program, at which he was expected to relaunch his career, use it as a platform for relaunching his career.
One other quick question related to the sexual impropriety topic. We've had now a disclosure of multitudes of, well, I shouldn't say multitudes, but several representatives and senators, or Senate representatives right now in Washington, D.C., that's now hit the U.S. Capitol and some state capitals. Politicians, again, in Europe, are they concerned? Is there a newfound awareness and or concern about scrutiny, if you will? Is the press in the other regions of the world, the United Kingdom and Europe, focusing on potential sexual impropriety? It seems to me that frankly, the European press has sort of taken these charges in stride historically, or am I wrong?
Well, no. There's been some cases in France, and there's been some cases here recently. Since the Harvey Weinstein, it certainly has picked things up. I think Britain probably pays more attention to what's happening in America than the rest of Europe, and it affects us more because of the special relationship. There have been some cases recently, not even before Harvey Weinstein, there was an investigation into a parliamentary pedophile ring, or alleged pedophile ring, which now looks as if it was false, and someone might be arrested for obstruction of justice and trying to lead the police up a garden path. There was a case of one Liberal MP called Cyril Smith, who was definitely, this was revealed after he died, he was definitely revealed as being part of a pedophile ring. Mm. And these things do crop up, and they are becoming more common.
Well, the other questions, and of course, let's just stay with us for a few more minutes before we get into some international issues. The recent display of Christmas decorations at the White House have become a topic of discussions in the media. And of course, we mentioned this about Christmas and politics. I'm curious, is there sort of an understanding at this time of year that politics takes sort of a back seat to the holiday season? Or have we gotten it to the point in Europe and the United Kingdom where it's all blended together, as it seems to be now in the States?
I think it's blended together. I mean, there's just so much happening that the media can't take their eye off the ball. The exception, if it's a good way to segue into it, is going to be the royal engagement.
Yes. And I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break on that one, because I want to come back. That's going to take a little longer to discuss. We have with us this afternoon, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And I do want to mention about LookAheadNews.com. You can subscribe to that. Go on the website, LookAheadNews.com. Become a subscriber. I guarantee you'll be pleased you did. So many pieces of information. You don't always necessarily have to agree with them, but it's always enlightening. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms with LookAheadNews.com's expanded world analysis for the week being the 4th of December. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. British Prime Minister Theresa May flies to Brussels on Monday for a final negotiating session with European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker before a crunch heads of government summit in mid-December. The bones of an agreement appear to have been reached, but the devil is still in the detail, especially as regards Ireland. Catalonian President Carles Puigdemont is in a Brussels court on Monday facing extradition to Spain. The Spanish government wants him on charges of rebellion and misuse of funds. Spain, meanwhile, is pressing ahead with Catalan elections to elect a new regional assembly. The campaign officially kicks off on Monday. The elections will be held on 21st of December. The election will be a de facto second independence referendum. On Tuesday, ministers from the EU's Economic and Financial Affairs Council meets in Brussels to draw up a tax haven blacklist. Potential penalties include withholding tax revenues, freezing development funds, and blocking EU loans. Germany's Social Democratic Party meets on Thursday to discuss forming a grand coalition with Angela Merkel's CDU-CSU partnership. The SPD has refused to participate in a coalition, but is now being urged to put national interest before party interest. NATO foreign ministers hold a session in Brussels on Tuesday and Wednesday. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will press for a united front against North Korea following Pyongyang's recent ballistic missile test. He will be pushing against an open door. The Senate Appropriations Committee on Tuesday hold hearings on the opioid crisis in America. Since 1999, the number of deaths attributed to opioid misuse has quadrupled. 6 out of every 10 drug overdoses in the U.S. are attributed to opioids. Steve Bannon is on the campaign trail next week. CEO of Breitbart News and former White House chief strategist is in Alabama to support Roy Moore in his bid to fill the Senate seat vacated by Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Judge Moore has slipped badly in the polls after sexual harassment accusations. The Nobel Peace Prize, the world's most prestigious prize, will be awarded in Oslo on Sunday. Nominees this year include both Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Nepal stages round two of its general elections. Over the past 27 years, the country has had 26 governments as it struggles to make the transition from Hindu monarchy to secular republic. In neighboring India, Prime Minister Narendra Modi will host the founding summit of the International Solar Alliance, aimed at encouraging the use of solar power. And that was next week's News Today, so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, of course, enjoying some sleep as this program is airing live. We have pre-recorded this. Tom, let's talk here quickly about the issue of the pending royal wedding. It's getting a lot of press here in the States. How about in Europe?
Oh, absolutely. When it comes to the royal family and weddings, everyone goes mad. You've got missiles going off in Korea. You've got problems in the Middle East. You've got problems with Brexit. You've got problems with Donald Trump. You've got problems with, or at least Trump's enemies. Mm-hmm. Everywhere there seems to be problems. But what's in the headlines? What's taking up all the inches and column inches in the newspapers? Meghan and Harry, over and over and over again. What does Meghan wear? Who does Meghan's hair? Who does her makeup? the whole lot. And it's if nothing bad is happening in the world anywhere.
You know, I've got to digress here for a moment, politically as well as culturally and socially. Great Britain, United Kingdom, a parliamentarian country. The royalty is, if you will, comparable to, and I would argue, the flag here in the United States. It's something that identifies the United Kingdom. Now, you've gotten the issue in Europe. Again, countries that were initially of a royal hierarchy, now majority of them parliamentary in some fashion, we'll use a democracy. Democracy republic. But it is fascinating, the continued focus on royalty. Is that unique to the United Kingdom, or am I thinking that possibly it's also a big issue even in the European countries?
It's a big issue in some of the European countries, not quite to the same degree,
okay,
because the UK is so much bigger. But for instance, in Sweden this week, mm-hmm. the third line to the throne, or second line to the throne in Sweden, is being christened. a baby called Carl Gustav, I think, is being christened. That might be the father on Saturday. And that's going to be a big thing in Sweden. And it's going to be covered. But it won't be covered internationally the way the British royal family is covered.
It is interesting. And, of course, we're watching with a great deal of interest. And, of course, the American connection as well. And how is that being received, the fact that this is she's a divorcee. And it's really sad, the discussion and descriptions of her being of a mixed race. Also, interestingly enough, there's some question as to her Jewish background. And so how is that all being received in the United Kingdom?
It's been very, very well received.
Good.
As a sign of maturity in society, of a more mature society. It's not talked about endlessly. It's a bit like the elephant in the room.
Right.
And everyone talks positively about her and makes the occasional reference to the fact that she's divorced. I think she has a child. She is mixed race, but it's not focused on. It's just mentioned in passing.
Right.
What is focused on is that Harry is happy. And that she looks as if she's going to make a very good consort for him and a good advertisement for Britain.
Yes. I will say it interestingly enough, it tightens that community relationship between the United Kingdom and the U.S. And of course, that's something that President Trump promised. And of course, something that Prime Minister Theresa May was counting on. Maybe this is going to go ahead.
Can I just add, it also tightens it. And there's a lot of focus on this, which you may not like, between Canada and the U.K. People are focusing more on the Canadian connection here than on the U.S., although the U.S. connection is not ignored. And that is because she's been living in Canada and telling people she prefers to live in Toronto than living in the U.S. So the Canadians have adopted her, and they are talking a lot about the Canadian connection and the Canadian link between the U.K. and Canada. And that's being reported a bit more than the U.S. connection.
No, that's fine, because we consider Canada part of the U.S. anyhow, with just a strange accent or maybe a little bit of French thrown in, with part of the greater North American continent. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. Speaking of the North American continent, and I'm going to now take it over to a military political connection, North Korea. And I'm wondering, first, is the story about the recent missile shoot making headlines in the UK and European press? And is there any sense of concern and foreboding?
Yes, much more so than a lot of the recent ones, because this one can reach the continental U.S. Everyone thought it was going to be years before they got there. And they've moved much faster than people realized. Everyone has condemned it. The Russians have condemned it and have said basically that they're not very optimistic about any type of agreement with North Korea. The Germans have condemned it. The Swedes have everyone. The UK has said it's unacceptable. In the past, they have either said nothing, decided, for the time being, keep their mouth shut, or they've just made some sort of wishy-washy comment. This time, it's been very loud and just below the Meghan Harry story.
Wow. Well, that's still...
But below it.
Now, I understand, but still, we celebrate something that takes our minds off the day-to-day issues. And so I do not fault the Brits for that at all. Quick question about this. Obviously, everybody's condemning it. But is there any consideration of what to do about it? Condemnation, really, to Kim Jong-un, it's just nothing. It's
yeah, but,
smoke.
I don't think the Trump administration has an answer either. The only really, if you go for the military solution, you're talking about nuclear weapons.
Right.
And then you're talking
about
nuclear war and dropping nuclear weapons.
We're not suggesting
in
that.
In a very congested part of the world.
Yeah, we're not suggesting that. I'm just curious, is there any other alternative?
If you use conventional weapons.
I don't want to.
Okay, but everyone is saying we need more sanctions.
But that's
even
the question.
The Chinese.
That's the question.
The Chinese have Xi Jinping apparently has told Trump that he's going to impose more sanctions. The Russians have said they will do the same. One of the problems with sanctions is that once you've imposed the sanctions, I'm just talking about sanctions generally, once you've imposed them, you lose that leverage.
Right. No question. It's a dilemma that...
It's a very difficult situation diplomatically.
Yes. Well, I was just curious if there was any import to that. Very quickly, and we're going to get back to this in a moment, but I want to touch on it very, very momentarily before we go to the break. We have concerns related, again, to international issues. You brought up Russia. Israel recently noted that Iranian arms in Syria and is challenged not to let, and has said that they will not let that happen. We've got events sort of developing in the Middle East. And as we prepare to go to this break, Tom, is the press paying attention to that?
No, not a great deal. It's certainly very, down.
Okay.
The page. There are a few references. I think the U.S. press is paying a bit more attention to it, but it's certainly very important. You and I discussed this the other week. It is, I think, going to move up the agenda here very quickly. Should we continue discussing it after the break?
We'll talk about that right after the break, because I want to bring up the issue of President Trump and his removal of support, apparently, for the Kurds and what impact this may have there in the Middle East as well. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon. Here, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. We're going to run through a variety of items here, but I want to focus on one item we just spoke to a few moments ago, Tom, related to Israel, concern related to Syrian arms and the fact that Iran has been pressing to provide support for Syria and, in fact, is, I think, proposing to introduce a military installation somewhere in Syria. You add to that President Trump's surprising announcement, apparently, that U.S. would not be arming the Kurds, which question asks, does that represent a reset with Turkey and the President Erdogan? So we'll wrap that up into two questions. What's the coverage and what's the observation, Tom?
That's certainly been covered. It's a classic case of you climb into bed with a superpower and eventually the superpower rolls over and crushes you.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wrote a column about this a few months ago saying, the U.S. would eventually squash the Kurds, that they would ignore them once they've used them. Because the Kurds are a destabilizing influence with their allies in the region. They are particularly a destabilizing influence in Turkey. They also claim part of Iraq, as you know. They want to form an independent state there, and U.S. wants to maintain good relations with Iraq. You don't really want to annoy Iran over this. And, of course, they also want part of Syria. So it's... they are just victims of alliances and and other diplomatic interests.
What does this do for the future of Turkey? And we're going to get to Brexit here in a moment. For the future of Turkey, and of course, Turkey has been sidling up to the Russians. They've been making relationships, strengthening their relationships with Iran. You want to talk about destabilizing? It strikes me that... go ahead.
I think it means that Turkey will probably seek better relations with the U.S. again.
Okay.
They'll still be wanting to keep the good relations with Russia. But one of the things that has been destabilizing relations with the U.S. has been American support for the Kurds.
Okay. All right. I think that's an interesting observation. We're not going to go into any great detail here, but I think it's worth noting. Let's stay in that portion of the world here for a moment. Let's talk about the situation with Egypt and Islamic State, ISIS, as we call it here. What's happening there?
It's not. It is a relation. It is a clash between Egypt and the Islamic State, but it's more of a clash between the Islamic State and Sufi Islam. Now, Sufi Islam, I've been trying to think of a comparison that your listeners could relate to. Sufi Islam is like evangelical or born-again Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a specific branch of Islam, like Sunni or Shiite, but it is more of a belief in very traditional Islamic practices, dating back even before Muhammad, when there wasn't an Islam, but it was, you know, more animist. They are definitely creationists. They have chants. They have equivalents of saints and things like that. They are much more devout. They believe in inner peace, finding the road to Allah. It's a bit, as I said, like fundamental Christianity.
Right.
The Sunni jihadists are very opposed to Sufi Islam. And so it's an attack on Sufism, and they've always been opposed to Sufism. Now, the Sufis in Egypt support al-Sisi as president, and they form their own political party, and there's 15 million Sufis in Egypt. And so it's an indirect attack on al-Sisi. And they're indirectly attacking him by attacking the Sufis, who they've been threatening to attack for years.
You know, it is interesting in light of the fact that we're supposedly eliminating ISIS. It is, and we've heard this term used many times before, asymmetrical. We're talking about, if you will, guerrillas. This is a grave concern. I want to move on to other items, but a curious aspect of this, and again, Europe being so close to all of this, is there focus and attention to this recent spate of terrorist attacks? And of course, there are accusations, or pardon me, say some challenges for the United Kingdom, particularly Great Britain. Is there a
Europe has very good relations with Egypt, but you know it's also being used to point out that, you know, not all Muslims are terrorists.
Right.
The Sufis themselves are very opposed to jihadism. You know, and it's a bit like saying that all Christians are, and I'm not, don't get this wrong, any Baptists out there, but all Christians are Baptists.
Right. No. And the Baptists will all get upset with that. Let's go on to other items. I want to move to some recent stories, and I've got to bring up an issue of, since we've touched on religion, the Pope and the Rohingya crisis. And this is an interesting issue. Tell very quickly if you can encapsulate this for us.
Well, it's very interesting. The Rohingya crisis involves a group of Islamic people, all of them Islams, about a couple million of them living in Myanmar, which used to be called Burma.
Mm-hmm.
And the Burmese, who are mainly Buddhist, have launched effectively a genocide campaign against them. And something between 500,000 and a million have fled a state of Rohingya in Burma, across the border into Muslim Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
And the UN has condemned this as textbook genocide.
Right.
Now, this is a classic thing for the Pope to get involved in, and it is his first ever visit to Myanmar. That is, any Pope. No Pope has ever visited Myanmar. And he's been meeting with Aung San Suu Kyi, who is the de facto leader, and with the military chiefs, and basically telling them that this is unacceptable. You know, why are you doing it? And then he's going off to visit the refugee camps in Bangladesh. And he's focusing, as he should, on the fact that this is not a political issue. It is not a military issue. It is a moral issue. And these people are breaking moral laws.
Is there any?
I think that's a very important distinction.
Okay, is there any effort related to this in the World Court of Opinion? Well, the World Court, is there any reaction? What and I'm going to move on to other items. But is there anything to be done?
Well, at the moment, everything that's been done has been very nominal. Aung San Suu Kyi has been stripped of her freedom of the city of Oxford, and a few other things like that. I suppose she could be stripped of her Nobel Prize laureate. People have condemned it, but there's no talk yet of sanctions or anything like that.
All right.
That may come.
All right. We'll touch on that as that story progresses. With just about 2 minutes to go, let's talk about Ireland and Brexit very quickly.
Well, it seems as if we're coming up to crunch point with Brexit. There's going to be a big meeting next week. And two out of the three issues appears to have been agreed, and that is the size of the divorce cash that's going to be paid, which is going to be massive. It's going to be, I think, about $60 to $70 billion. They were talking about 30, but it's gone up. EU nationals issue and British nationals in EU has been resolved, but they seem to be deadlocked over the border between Northern Ireland and Ireland. And the Irish government has said they will veto any move to start trade talks until this issue is resolved. And if that happens, well, it's up in the air again.
And of course, we were talking about this last week, the fact that it would be what you described as a hard border, in the sense that there would actually be border agents checking every item that's brought across the divide between Ireland and Northern Ireland. And this is going to create a whole new structure. And the concern, as I recall our conversation last week, Tom,
let me give you an example. You have chlorinated chicken,
right?
Which is not acceptable to the Europeans. They don't like chlorinated chicken.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about the UK importing chlorinated chicken from the US. Now, if there's a soft border, as there is at the moment, which means basically no border controls, that chlorinated chicken could come into the UK, into Northern Ireland, go into Ireland, and because there's no borders between Ireland and the rest of the EU, into EU. So it's things like that. It effectively opens the gates to smuggling.
Right. And of course, we talked about this in relationship to the, quite frankly, the Northern Ireland and Ireland, or Northern Ireland and UK relationship, which has been, well, heated in the past. All right. We're going to get back to other items. I want to chat with you about the India visit by the U.S., Ivanka, and she's in India. And then we're going to wrap up things with Thanksgiving in the Arms household. And I see that we're going to have a discussion, a brief note here, about cooking. So stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Donald Trump has shot the special relationship in the foot. It will recover. The special relationship between the U.S. and Britain does not rely on one president, one prime minister, or even one monarch. They are all relatively ephemeral influences in a relationship based on centuries-old links involving a common legal foundation, a common language, almost, that is, cultural and family ties, and common political philosophies. But the hole in the foot hurts. It means that the relationship will now limp along in a time when events on both sides of the Atlantic and elsewhere in the world demands that the normal, good, steady stride be used. So what did Trump do? And more importantly, why? Well, for those who've just emerged from a spelunking trip, the president has been tweeting again. Or to be more precise, retweeting. This time, President Trump retweeted a video from Jada Franson, deputy leader of the far-right Britain First. The video purports to show the violent activities of Muslim immigrants in Europe, and it is aimed to support the movement's hate-filled anti-Islamic, anti-immigration message. Setting aside the morality of the message, the video had virtually no basis in fact. It was the fakest of fake news. Just the sort of thing Trump loves to attack. But this did not bother the president or his spokesperson, Sarah Huckabee, who dismissed the credibility issue. It's the threat that counts, she said, and the threat is real. Threats like medical diagnoses must be based on hard facts. If a doctor makes the wrong diagnosis, then the prescribed treatment will be wrong and the patient will die. If a politician, especially the President of the United States, makes decisions on false information, then the resultant actions will cost lives. Surprise, surprise. Trump's retweets and subsequent spirited defense provoked an outcry of rage from every public figure in the UK, starting with Prime Minister Theresa May and working itself all the way through Parliament, over to London Mayor Sadiq Khan, and finally to the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. The country is hopelessly divided over Brexit and completely united against President Trump. I am certain that the horse-loving Queen is chomping at the bit to put in her two pence worth. Her advisers must be having a difficult time restraining her with the reminder that she must remain above politics. So, why did President Trump set out to damage relations with his country's closest ally? Was it just a thoughtless shoot from the hip, off the tip of the fingers retweet? Or was it an actual, carefully thought-out reason for it? I don't know which scenario is worse, but I tend towards the second one. Trump has been completely convinced by people such as Nigel Farage and his former chief strategist Steve Bannon that Britain is being dragged into political oblivion by unbridled Muslim immigration. To him, the UK is an object lesson for America. It is part of his presidential mission that the same fate does not befall the United States. Forget the special relationship. It takes the seat at the back of the bus when set against the racial and immigration aspects of the president's twisted America First policy. The retweets may also be linked to another chapter in the travel ban saga. On Wednesday, Trump's proposed ban is back in court. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals will hear oral arguments in the case. The travel ban has been expanded since it was first blocked. It now includes people from six Muslim countries and Venezuela and North Korea. The Trump administration is hoping that the inclusion of non-Islamic countries in the ban will enable the administration to circumvent the freedom of religion argument. He may also be using his Twitter account to prepare the ground for the appeal. Terrorism and hate politics are indeed a threat and an abomination. Whether they come from the left, the right, Muslims, Hindus, or far-right Christians, Britain First is a hate group. Trump's decision to retweet their message in pursuit of his political agenda only feeds further division and hate in Britain and America.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107 AM 1240, is Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, we have the president's daughter, Ivanka, Ivanka Trump, but she's actually Ivanka Kushner, who is in India as we speak. What's the coverage on that? Is it being covered?
Oh, huge, huge coverage. Live coverage on all the Indian television channels.
Why?
Well, because everybody loves glamour, especially if it's glamour out of the White House. Do you remember Jackie Kennedy and President Kennedy going to Europe in the 60s?
Yes.
And John Kennedy's famous remark, you may all know me, I'm the man who came to Europe with Jackie.
Right. Yes. Yes.
And people love young, beautiful women. And Ivanka is young and beautiful. She's glamorous. She's a successful business person. She's the perfect ambassador for this sort of thing. Now, the Trump administration wants to develop relations with India as a counterweight to China. China and India don't like each other. That's fine for the Trump administration. They don't want China being too powerful. India wants help in being more powerful.
And by the way, that's recognized also by the European community as well, if I'm not mistaken, because they're strengthening their relations with India as well. By the way, the largest democracy in the world, interestingly enough.
It is, yes. It's a billion people.
Mm-hmm. So
probably over, I think, 1.1 billion now.
And we've talked about this on numerous occasions about the focus on the economy of India and how fast it's growing. And it's very
well. It's actually slowed down a bit now.
It has, but it's still
6%. It was growing faster than the Chinese.
Right.
But they had a problem with which was sparked off by a monetization proposal, and so it slowed down. I think to about 5.5 or something like that.
But still, this is an important story. And Europe, is the European press interested in this as well?
They're not interested. They're not reporting Ivanka very much. No,
okay.
I think they should be. Because, as I said, you know, glamour helps to promote good relations.
All right.
People like it when a glamorous film star or glamorous presidential assistant comes to visit them, makes them feel good, and they like to do business with people they like. Everyone does.
Understood. All right, let's move on to – well, speaking of that, let's talk briefly because we've also got to get to the cooking exercise – Thanksgiving in the Arms household. Do people like going to the Arms household and for Thanksgiving? And by the way, when is this event taking place?
Saturday.
Oh, this Saturday.
It's late for us. We can never have it on a Thursday as, you know, traditional Thanksgiving. So we usually have it on the closest weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, my wife went off to New York to spend Thanksgiving with our daughter there. And she's working there at the moment. And also with some of her relatives. So we postponed it till this Saturday. We thought of not having it, but there was such an uproar because people fight over tickets.
Oh, gosh. All right. Enough.
We usually have about 24 people.
Well,
the silver is polished. We hire in chairs and tables,
okay.
A big banquet with candles and waiters and everything else. I give a speech. And it goes on to 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
My land. All right. And let's talk about the food that will be prepared for this feast. Something about bread?
Well, I'm ordering pumpkin pies as soon as I finish speaking to you.
Okay.
And we will have turkey. We will have sweet potato casserole. It would be very, very American.
My question is...
That is one of the... attractions of it.
Okay, now all of these ingredients, are they readily available in the United Kingdom? Pumpkins, for example, turkeys?
They didn't used to be,
okay.
But they are now. When we first came here, we had difficulty getting these things, and now it's much easier. I remember once in the States, Eileen and I, before we were married, wanted to make a pumpkin pie, and the only... You had to buy a pumpkin pie mix in a tin, and when we looked it up in the cookbook, they said, whatever you do, don't try and use a pumpkin.
Well, there's certain works that has to be done, particularly roasting the pumpkin. Let's talk very quickly about bread made from crickets.
Yes, Finland.
Mm-hmm.
There is a big bakery chain there called Fraser's, 50 different bakery outlets. They have launched, I think, tomorrow or the next day, cricket bread.
And what is it made of?
They take 70 dried crickets, ground them up into cricket flour, and add it to normal wheat flour. And it's going to be going on sale. It's supposed to be better for you. It has protein, B12, calcium, everything else. But they needed special legislation from the Finnish Parliament to allow them to put it on sale.
And I gather they got that?
They got it. They got it. And I've sent you the recipe.
All right.
Which I hope you'll be putting up.
We will be posting on our Facebook page. That's from Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with viewpoints around the world. And I might add, with tastes around the world. You've been listening to Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.